Okay, good morning, everyone. I also have no relationships to disclose. So this is a study that was funded by NINR, as the previous study was. This was an R21, so it was a developmental study. And you, by the end of this talk, you will know that we still have a lot to learn based on this developmental study about the topic that we investigated. I want to acknowledge my co-investigators, the first two of whom are at the University of Connecticut, and the second two are at the research arm of the primary care physician group network that we worked with in this study. And I want to acknowledge the research team as well at the UConn Center on Aging. And obviously, I want to also acknowledge all the study participants, which included people with dementia, their family caregivers, and the primary care physicians and their office staff who participated. So just by way of background, a very different kind of background, this is a focus on primary care. There's been a lot written over many, many years now about how primary care for people either with suspected memory problems or even with diagnosed dementia and for their family caregivers continues to be suboptimal. And that summarizes a lot of literature at this point in time. More broadly, primary care in the United States is moving more towards service models that involve more than just physicians. They involve nurses, other clinicians, to improve health outcomes sooner and to save downstream health care costs. I'm sure probably everybody in the room has heard about patient-centered medical homes as well as Medicare accountable care organizations. So when you think about these attempts to redesign primary care, the question is, how can you do that for people with dementia and their families? So how will dementia and associated conditions, which often include for people with cognitive impairment, depression, as well as bouts of delirium, be best managed in these new primary care service models? And at the same time, by way of background, it's really important to note that in the profession of nursing, there has been a real effort recently to develop geropsychiatry as a particular area of expertise within the nursing profession. So there's a lot of effort being put into introducing into nursing schools at the undergraduate level geropsychiatric competencies, and we built on that effort as well in this study. So the aims of the study were, first of all, to determine the preliminary efficacy of a nurse practitioner-guided service model in the primary care setting for people with dementia with recently diagnosed dementia. So that's very important to keep in mind. We were really trying to focus on getting primary care patients who had been recently diagnosed by their primary care physicians involved in this research, as well as their family caregivers. Originally, the study was called Proactive Primary Dementia Care, but the physicians did not like that name. They felt that that was a detriment to recruiting patients, just having the word dementia in the title of the study, of the project. So they suggested that we rename it, and that's why it's called what it's called now, Proactive Memory Care. Secondly, we wanted to determine the acceptability, really, or proof of concept of this proactive memory care intervention, because, again, it was a developmental study. So these are some of the features of the model that we tested. We used a nurse practitioner, obviously. I've mentioned that already. But the reason we chose a nurse practitioner as opposed to an RN is because it's a reimbursable service in the primary care setting. And this is often where a lot of really great ideas fall by the wayside after the grant funding ends, so to speak, is how's this going to be paid for. So from the beginning, we really wanted to focus on augmenting primary care physician care with a clinician for whom Medicare, in this case, would pay the bill. And nurse practitioners receive for home visits, when they're affiliated with primary care, about 85% of what physicians get reimbursed for. But at least they get paid by Medicare. It's not 100% of what physicians get, but it's about 85%. The nurse practitioner that we hired for this study was trained for demonstrated clinical competencies in geropsychiatry, and we had nationally known nurses in this area who were on our advisory group who made sure that this training was in place and the competencies are in place before we went into the field. This nurse practitioner joined forces with three different primary care group practices in Connecticut. And we developed a manual, so this was a manualized service delivery intervention, and it was an in-home intervention. So the nurse practitioner made 12 monthly in-home visits to the persons with dementia and caregivers who consented to participate in the study. She provided very, very detailed health assessments during the first two in-home visits, And that really gave her an opportunity to get to know the patients pretty much as well as the primary care physicians knew the patients. And she checked back with the primary care physician to make sure she understood about medication issues. And at times, she even questioned some of the medications that that were being provided. And so there's a lot of back and forth with the referring primary care physician. She also educated the person with dementia and caregiver about the progression of the disease process, symptom development, and community resources. And we used the protocols for the intervention that were developed at Indiana University by Christopher Callahan and colleagues. Some of you might know about his work in Alzheimer's collaborative care. So we adopted their protocols to use in the home setting. And then obviously the nurse practitioner provided physicians with monthly updates. So who is eligible for the study? Persons with dementia, if they were regular patients in those primary care practices, if they were 50 years or older and still lived at home. Secondly, they had to have been diagnosed by their primary care physician with some type of irreversible dementia within 12 months of the start of the recruitment period, and we had a whole list of ICD-9 codes. For those of you who are interested, I could give you more information on that. And they had to be English-speaking. The family caregivers had to be known to the primary care physician and their office staff. And in the end, that was not really that difficult. Most of these patients, and again, some of you might know this from personal or professional experience, are accompanied to the primary care visit by a family member. And the family caregiver did not have to live in the same household with the person with dementia, but had to live in the geographic area and be willing to participate in the trial, and also had to be English-speaking. So in terms of the design, this was a non-equivalent control group design. So three different primary care group practices served as the control sites. I already mentioned the intervention sites. And in these sites, the patients and family caregivers continued to receive usual primary care, but of course no nurse practitioner. The control group dyads did receive in addition to receiving usual care, they received educational materials from our research staff at the time of the baseline research interview, and we made sure that our research staff were very knowledgeable about these educational materials. They were brochures and pamphlets from the National Alzheimer's Association about dementia and about caregiver stress, and we also had information, written information about community resources, support services that the control group dyads could turn to if they wanted to. And at the six-month follow-up, we also made sure that if they had not read those pamphlets or if they had misplaced them, our research staff gave the control group dyads information again. So the primary endpoints were 12 months after the consent and baseline data, baseline and consent process. So the outcomes we looked at were the neuropsychiatric inventory for persons with dementia and the quality of life AD scale. And for caregivers, we looked at their dementia management self-efficacy, their depressive symptoms, and their caregiver burden. And all of these were based on measures that have been published in the literature. And for acceptability, we basically used satisfaction, self-administered satisfaction questionnaires. The intervention group patients and caregivers completed a 12-item satisfaction questionnaire where we focused on the nurse practitioner's delivery of the service model and also commenting on the content of the intervention from their point of view, their satisfaction with it based on where they were in their understanding of the disease. And these were all administered at the 12-month follow-up period. And the primary care physicians also completed a satisfaction questionnaire, and we developed that questionnaire based on discussions with the primary care physicians before we started the study about what they would deem to be a successful intervention. And then from that, we developed the satisfaction questionnaire. We had a lot of recruitment challenges, and that's really the main finding with regard to our first aim, which was to determine preliminary efficacy. We fell short of our recruitment goals by quite a bit. We wanted to get 35 dyads in each group. That's what the study was powered for. We did not get close to that. We enrolled 21 intervention group dyads and 10 control group dyads. A lot of reasons for that, so a lot of lessons learned, and you can see some of those here. It turned out there was a lot of bad timing for this study, and those are things you can never, ever anticipate when you write a grant application. Mainly, these primary care practices were gearing up to become patient-centered medical homes. Remember I mentioned them earlier in my study, and they became completely preoccupied with implementing electronic health records as well as meaningful use activities to be able to qualify to be patient-centered medical homes. They were successful in achieving their goal, but it really hampered our ability to have the office staff's attention in helping us recruit. And from a human subjects point of view, those of you who do this kind of research know that you can, as a research team, you cannot gain access to these individuals until they agree, after having been notified by their provider, that they're willing to talk to the research team. So we basically had to wait for the primary care offices to send names to us, and that ended up being greatly hampered by these other things that these primary care practices were preoccupied with. When we got people to agree to participate, when we got primary care physicians to invite people to participate and then to tell us that they would talk with us, we found out that even if they were eligible, quite a few of the dyads said that they weren't interested. And the last bullet there, I think, is really important to keep in mind. There was a denial of dementia and the belief that nothing could really help, which was one of the main reasons why these dyads ended up refusing to participate. So these are some of the issues that you're up against in trying to do this kind of research in the real-world primary care community setting. In the few minutes I have left, I'll just kind of show you some of the characteristics of the dyads and just give you the main results here. The intervention and control group patients did not differ from each other significantly on any of the baseline characteristics. You'll see at the bottom there, the median MMSE scores were actually quite high, and so these were definitely people in the earlier stages of dementia. So they were, in the intervention group, able to participate quite actively with the nurse practitioner in the intervention. There were no differences between the caregivers in the two groups either. And this just shows you the change over time at baseline 6 and 12 months, very little cognitive decline over the 12 months in this sample of patients. So that made it difficult to really look at an intervention effect, because this intervention was basically premised on the fact that there would be cognitive decline and there would be some opportunity for the intervention to help patients and families adjust to that cognitive decline. We didn't see it. And so that's another important lesson when you're working with recently diagnosed people with dementia. No differences in outcomes. I think I'll just leave it at that. We can talk about that more if you'd like. On the positive side, this was a highly acceptable intervention. So in terms of proof of concept, this really was very popular with the patients with dementia, with the family caregivers who are shown on this slide in terms of the mean satisfaction score. So a mean of 4 would mean that everybody in the intervention group, either the person with dementia or the caregivers, rated it a 4 or very satisfied. And these are the mean scores. So on all of those satisfaction measures that you could see on the left-hand side here, nearly everybody rated this a 4, both the patients and the family caregivers. Similarly, the mean scores on the right-hand side show among the primary care physicians who rated this, they were also extremely satisfied with the work that the nurse practitioner did on behalf of their patients and their family caregivers. And just one quote that I'll mention is, the whole issue of the patient just seemed to be much more in a positive mood when visiting the office during the course of the study period, and the physician attributed that to the nurse practitioner. So in terms of lessons learned in the zero time I have left, once implemented and widely used, electronic health records should actually help us do a better job of targeting patients. And secondly, you need more adequate recruitment resources to recruit people for this kind of study. And you have to anticipate reasons that patients and families might tell you that they're not interested, and have a good script ready to talk about why there really might be some benefit to them to participate. And then we just have a whole bunch of next steps in which we're really just trying to build on some of these lessons learned, which, again, I'll be glad to talk with anybody about later. Thank you very much.